Welcome to the Simon Parkes Connecting Consciousness Show on Wolf Spirit Radio. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
Oh, yes, you are. And welcome, Simon Parkes. Good afternoon, good evening in UK. And how are you doing today?
I was very disappointed, JP. I thought you'd have some Christmas bells, seeing it was December.
Have I got some jingle bells? I'm sure I had a little bell tree somewhere. Anyway, good afternoon and welcome. How are you doing? How's your last month been?
Stressful. I was looking back, you know, and this is the fifth year that I've been in the public eye. So it's been 5 years non-stop. And when I look back, I actually realised I hadn't had any sort of holiday. Sure, I've had the, you know, weekend, long weekend here and there, but I haven't actually had what you would normally consider a holiday. So I thought, you know, we've had a very, very difficult, from a planet-wide, last 3 months. And I thought, well, it would be really good to try and take some downtime, try and rest. So what I'm hoping to do over the next 3 months is just take a little bit of a break. It's not so easy because people will remember, and the audience certainly will remember, that I predicted from the beginning of November just gone through to March of next year, it was going to be a very, very difficult time. And in fact, it was yesterday somebody said to me, oh, you must be very pleased because everything you predicted has come true, in the sense that, you know, I said things would be difficult. And I said, actually, I'm not, because 130 people lost their lives in France and 500 were wounded. We've had all the attacks in America. We've had another knife attack in London, I think, yesterday. No, I'm not. It doesn't give me the slightest bit of fun or happiness or pride to know that what I've said is beginning to come true. We've had more, what I call them, terrorist attacks. We've had more attacks in America and Europe in the last few weeks than in any other period. The amount of fear that they're trying to generate in a very short period of time is incredible. So although I will be taking a bit of a break, I'm certainly not going to stop doing the radio show. I'll do the occasional interview online, but I'm not going to do any more public appearances, certainly until the March period is over with and we get a bit more stability.
Thank you. So I totally understand where you're at. I've been, you know, obviously this last year has been very, well, last year and a half since Dave died has been very, very intense for me. And you know, we're getting busier and busier. There's more and more whistleblowers, there's more and more false flags, there's more and more stuff that we've been talking about for 5 years now on the station. And again, like you're saying, you know, it's not something that we're proud of, that our predictions are coming true. It's a sad prediction. And so here we are, and I completely agree. I feel very, very tired, and I'm starting to make mistakes when I'm tired. So I'm starting to, you know, mess things up. So I certainly need a holiday too. So if anybody wants to invite me somewhere, I don't know. It's hard for me to leave my house. You know, with all my chickens and everything. Anyway, so Simon, all that being said. Mm-hmm. Shall we dive into the mystery treasure trove?
Let us begin.
Now, I want to say, I have been flooded, inundated, tsunamied with questions from every single possible vector. You know, people have sent me messages on Skype, messages on Facebook. Yeah, that's normal. They've sent, you know, sent messages in the Facebook chat room. I've asked Beth Tyrell to gather the CC questions, the Connecting Consciousness Group questions, which she has dutifully and very beautifully. Also, Vanessa has been collecting them from the Wolf Spirit chat room. But here, in front of me, and I want to deal with this first because it's unique. Somebody actually sent me a letter to my house with a question for you.
So, well, you'll have to read that one out.
Yeah, this one, and this is from Daria. So, the question is, dear JP, may you please ask this question. One evening I fell asleep slightly early and suddenly woke up utterly frightened with a loud shout. I saw a black spider the size of a dinner plate just above my face. It didn't move. I knew it was something really bad, and I prayed to God for never having such experience ever again. It never reappeared again. What was it?
Well, she's not alone. More people than you would imagine report these spider-type creatures. They're not to be confused with, I think when Miles Johnson refers to as scuttlers, and there are others which are more robotic in their makeup. This is an energy form. It's real. I'm not convinced we could call it an alien. I think we would have to call it one of these Denzians from the interdimensional region between the third and the fourth. The reason they're black is like the shadow creatures or the shadow man, because when you come from the fourth dimension into the third, as you're making that transition, you absorb all light. So if you can imagine something coming from the fourth to the third and you were to shine a torch or a flashlight into it, you wouldn't get any reflection back. The light would just automatically be absorbed, and the light would come out wherever that creature has started from. So it would be sucking the light in. And that's why they appear black. And if they were to come right into the third dimension, they would become organic and real, and therefore they would reflect light back. So the reason that she saw a black spider and it was above her face was because it was transitional between the third and the fourth dimension. It's not unusual for jinn to take shapes, but it is unusual for them to take a spider. I actually think that this is more like one of the shadow beings. It's an energy form, it's a living creature in its own right, but I've never ever seen anything like that physical. I've only seen them on an energy. So it's not a jinn. It's going to be more like something else. So jinn doesn't need to be too worried about it. It's not something that I think can actually harm her. The reason it's right above her face is exactly the same as the grey aliens do. They actually peer right over your face and they attempt to make some form of connection. I think the creature was trying to scan her. What she could do is just literally get a map, depending on where she is, and just check out ley lines, any old stone circles, depending on which country or where she is. But have a look, because these creatures tend to operate on energy lines that are crisscrossing the earth. So that's something she could have a look at.
So it might be just like a she just happens to be parked on Piccadilly Circus, and this thing's passing through.
Yes.
Rather than specifically sort of
absolutely
trying to sit on her face, wasn't it?
Absolutely, incredibly accurate. That's exactly what can happen. These are like super highways. They don't just transmit good. I mean, anyone can use them who has the will. So yes. So it would be worth a while just getting a map and then just seeing what she can find.
Yeah, and maybe connect with the local dowsing society to check this
very
out.
Very good idea. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Very
okay,
good.
So now I've got two lists of questions. One that came in from the CC group, and another one that has come in from the current chat room today. And what I'd like to do is, alternate, because
yes,
there's so much. So let's start with this is from the chat room. Let's start from the chat room here. And this is from Stephanie. Since 3 years, for 3 years, as in a daily basis, the other double numbers, like 10, 10, 13, 13, 15, 15. Apparently there are more people in the world who see this phenomenon. Do you know something about this phenomenon? Can you explain the meaning of it?
The number phenomenon is related to the individual. So people will see numbers, but they'll see numbers that are related to their birth or the particular zodiac or the way that the stars were on their birth. These are numbers that relate to them. Now, this is when the numbers are divine source orientated. Sometimes they can be manipulated by off-world entities who are using particularly electronics like a digital clock, something like that, to try and send a message to you to try to make you aware or question. The more sinister aspect is when elite human groups try to use it as a trigger mechanism. So somebody who's had mind control, you know, they might begin to see certain numbers in a what appear to be random in the sense of the way they see them, but they're not random because they are repeating the same sort of numbers. And that's more concerning because that means that's manipulation in an attempt to trigger somebody. But, you know, many people I know have said to me, oh, you know, there it is, 1333 again, or 1666. That's actually nothing to be concerned about. That's literally an individual who is very connected to the environment, the source, and is making a connection with numbers. You could even say that you are creating those numbers yourself. So all I would say is that providing it's not negative, go with it, act on it. So, you know, literally you are going to get on a train or you're going to get an aeroplane and you get these series of numbers, you might really wish to consider whether you want to take that flight or get on that train, because these are messages to you and it's how you interpret them.
That's right. And if a psychic convention cancels its booking, don't take the same plane. Don't go there.
Yes, what that cartoon.
Yeah, it's great.
It's brilliant. As that person's listening, thank you very much. It was great.
So, from CC member Alex Donnelly, the fourth dimension. Simon has commented on a question like this before, that fourth density beings will become visible to humanity when it perceives in this frequency range. What about the landscape of the 3D Earth? The land features, mountains, trees, hills. Is the third dimension the basis of the fourth, like a skeleton in the human body, for example? That's a very interesting question. Is it us that is in the third dimension and the trees are always in all dimension? I mean, what's the deal with that?
Imagine two drawings or two pictures, and then you superimpose one picture on top of another, but you are painted in one picture with your environment. Best way to think about it on cellulose, or a celluloid rather, where you can superimpose one onto another. So your reality stays the same, but you are aware of someone else. Now their reality stays the same, but suddenly you are able to perceive them and they can perceive you. At the moment, this is only happening to people who are at that position, that at that development of their life, and even then it's only fleetingly. There are people who perhaps for 15-20 minutes a week are beginning to see this, and that's quite freaky for people, because you're having to educate your brain. One minute you may be sort of dealing with something quite physical, and the next minute you appear to be looking out onto a hillside, but you actually getting these very unusual elements. So as we move through the fourth dimension, or also as the fourth dimension is impinging into our reality, so more and more people will see these. But your reality will stay the same, but it won't feel solid. That's the point. During these experiences, your everyday world it'll just go, in the sense that you won't feel connected, because you'll be drawn to this wonderful image. The best thing to do, and it reminds me of a Patrick McGoohan, The Prisoner episode. He was in the Wild West, and in order to get reality, what he did was he gripped a hitching post. What I'm saying is, if people are suddenly going in that, and the concerning time is if you're driving, and suddenly the road ahead seems to change, like you to do is just to grip the steering wheel or grip your leg, grip something physical to ground you back in the 3D so that you don't have an accident. So that's the best advice I can give you specifically.
I was trying to find a little jingle that says, I'm not a number, I'm a free man. But anyway.
Sound like Father Christmas stuck in a chimney.
Yeah, well, that one didn't work. Anyway, so much for jingles.
Marvellous. So, yeah.
I've not had anything Christmassy from you at all.
No, I don't do Christmas.
But that's not fair.
It's not fair. I haven't even got a ho-ho-ho. I tried to be Father Christmas for Red Revolution Radio last year, and I failed miserably. I just couldn't be cheerful. It was like, I was seeing all this doom and gloom around last Christmas. And I'm like, oh, ho-ho-ho, what do you want for Christmas? How about world peace? Anyway. So, hey, Simon, this is, and I can't, Kliphoff Thick 9, or something. Hey, Simon, you mentioned about a possibly coming global DNA ascension to a higher frequency, while coding it as midnight point. What indicators do you believe we may say at 5 seconds to midnight? And will those who make it through the threshold... Yeah, still be tangible and corporeal in this third dimensional existence, or will they become astral entities? So that kind of goes on from the, you know, what happens at midnight when we become four?
I can understand how that's occurred. The question has misunderstood me slightly, and that's not at all surprising because I probably not explained it correctly. I often refer to the hands being 1 minute to midnight in definite reference to people who have elite positions and are choosing to try and hold down the human race. Basically, my understanding is that as humanity begins to see through the veil, it becomes untenable for main organizations. And I had a very interesting chat with a director of Microsoft. Won't obviously mention his name, but Microsoft, as a multinational company, apparently are fully aware that in the coming months there's going to be a huge change, and they intend to maintain the trust of the people. In other words, Microsoft as a corporation know that there are some huge changes coming in the way that the people on this planet are going to view life. And they have got people in key positions to change their organization so that they can maintain their business structure. So that, I think, is very telling. In back to the question, critical mass is 51%. So when 51% of the human population decide on something, it happens. But it's detectable long before that. So if you're at 10 and 15%, those who have eyes to see and ears to hear will already be making plans. Because what will happen at that moment is that people will suddenly be aware that they've been lied to and tricked, and they will no longer accept the status quo. So it isn't some sort of magical moment, but it is a eureka moment for many people. And remember, most people who this will happen to are not listening to our show. They're the ones who are still very much sucked into the system. So for them, it's going to be an incredible big shock. And, you know, with the murders taking place around our planet at the moment, this is beginning to undermine people's perceptions of what the system is, who protects them, why this is occurring. And although it's not a good thing, I suppose one of the few positive things coming out of it is that it is actually making people question. So there's a whole lot of things going to happen in the next few months. And so... I don't expect the ground to open and lightning bolts to come flying down, but I do expect people to start completely turning away from the system that they have slavishly followed for years and years.
That's a really important thing, is being able to slowly disconnect. So, Max of Steel says, question for Simon. During a soul reading, you told me that if I was with the show, You told me that if I was with the Shadow Government, I would have been a super soldier or a black magician. Can you tell us how someone with skills like mine, physical and mental, can become assets for humanity? Thank you for your time and effort.
Excellent question. There's a lot of confusion about what a super soldier is, and I suppose sometimes I become too picky in the sense that I try to cover all the bases. If you have been something like that, then the main issue for you is the mind control that goes with it. If you can break through the mind control, then you have some wonderful assets physically and mentally which can be used. And the best thing to do is to join a healing group or to join a counselling group, and then other people who are or have been in the same position, you can support them. Now, if somebody, as in this case, isn't in that but could have been, it means that they have skills and abilities and understanding which hasn't yet been unlocked. So what they need to do is to unlock their skills and abilities, and because they've made a positive choice for humanity, and those skills and abilities won't be used against the human race. And again, they can use them and they can join some group and, you know, use it to assist other people. So the thing is helping other people, service to others. And if you have skills and abilities, then you can do it. Now, if you don't have those skills and abilities, there's still things that you can do. So if anybody's got those skills and abilities, see about helping others. Okay.
Put it into service. Wonderful.
Yes.
Okay. Right. Okay, so back, more the dimension things. So they're flooding. There's these huge pile of them. Let me just read through this and we can pick up. A friend of mine was recently explaining perspective about energy bodies, physical, etheric, mental, emotion. Can someone offer his perspective? And does this all work differently from the third in the other densities, like the fourth and fifth? So yeah, if you're a fourth dimensional person, I think it was exactly, if you're a fourth dimensional person, do you have an astral body in the fifth dimension and a mental body in the sixth dimension, and so on? And you know, with more added to this, does this fourth dimension use our 3D hologram as its basis with other aspects superimposed? I think you said that. Do higher dimensional beings also have higher dimensional aspects of themselves like that?
Right. If you are a fifth dimensional being, then you are just like us, because you will be organic. But the difference is that time and space in the fifth, as it is in the fourth, but we're just talking at the moment between third and fifth, the difference between time and space is so great that anybody in the fifth dimension would have a head start, because their, what they take for granted, their understanding allows them to comprehend questions and issues that are greatest or best scientists are incapable of comprehending, because they are still stuck in a paradigm which goes back to Einstein and beyond. So if you're coming from the fifth dimension, then you are physical and real. Your higher self isn't higher self, because it's already been absorbed into you. That's the difference. So if you're in the fifth dimension, you have a completely different spiritual outlook on life, and you're far more connected. Now, if you come to the fourth dimension, oddly enough, they're more like us, because they still have this completely different concept of time and space, and that gives them the advantage. That's why they can temporarily time travel, and we officially can't. But they're not necessarily any more spiritual, and in many cases they're less spiritual in the fourth dimension. That's because they are stalled in terms of bringing in their DNA. And that's what they fear, one of the things they fear about humanity, because humanity is overtaking them. Humans are connecting their DNA and are overtaking, outstripping many of these fourth dimensional entities who have chosen to, live in a life of self-service. So I didn't really grab the question. I'll just try and finish it off. If you are third dimensional, you have a physical body and you have an energy higher self, have aura, etc., etc. If somebody from the third dimension was to go to the fourth or the fifth dimension, they would remain exactly the same. If somebody from the fifth or the fourth dimension was to come here, they would remain exactly the same. But those people from higher dimensions, except the fourth, are more advanced in terms of their spiritual understanding, and thus their technological understanding is greater. I hope that sort of answers it.
I hope so. Thank you. So, now here we go to more material. Is it possible that humans could be injected with black goo, for example, by a vaccination? And if so, is there a cure or method to get the substance out of the body? P.S. Information advice at your website is really valuable. Thank you for supporting us. Warmest regards, Eva.
Oh, that's very kind. Thank you, Eva. There's an owl. I've got a cat sitting on me that's decided to bite me.
Ah, stop it.
There's no, to my knowledge, there's no plan or intention to inject people with black goo simply because the negatives don't have a need to do that. The process for trapping it and containing it is so expensive and so difficult that it would not be possible to put it into a form that you could inject people with on a wide scale. People who are more likely to be, if I can use the word, infected with black goo are people who work consistently on motor cars, because a proportion of the engine oil will contain these elements, and that's why it's really important that if you're changing the oil in your motor vehicle, you wear gloves. And if you get any on you, then wash it. I mean, the chances of it being black goo are, you know, 0.1%. But nevertheless, that is a medium through which it can connect, because it's obviously associated in the same way. So no, that's not what the elite intend to do. The elite intend to go down the chipping through inoculation. And that's one of the things we've got to look out for the next 2 years, when there may be a government diktat saying that, you know, everybody is going to be inoculated. So we know that's happening in Australia, and we know that's happening in the city of Oslo, so we just have to watch it. So no to the black goo, we don't have to worry about that yet.
Well, that's a relief. So, back to the CC questions. Simon, what do you think of all the channeled messages coming through saying disclosure and the event are coming soon, possibly within a few months?
The question is right. It's upped dramatically. The number of people declaring that they are receiving channel messages, if you add in those who don't understand their channeling and they just think they're getting voices or they're writing, is incredible. Now, a lot of this is genuine. Some of it is spurious, designed to cause trouble. So when anybody gets a channel message with a date, then we would be a little bit suspicious of that. But when it comes through and it's sort of generally saying that, you know, this is going to be happening in a relatively quick or soon moment, that I think would be considered to be genuine. Yes, it's on the cards. The bit I can just add to that, a number of times Washington, the American government, has been advised that it needs to disclose. And each time the government has come back and said they can't do it, they weren't in a position to do it, and it's given lots of various reasons. Well, they were given another date, and they were told that this date wasn't movable. And they are desperately seeking to get some sort of advance on that date. The point is, you see, that if the governments of the world, but American government, of course, does the disclosure, it controls how that information is released, and it controls, to a certain extent, the reaction. But if it's taken out of its hands and that disclosure is made by something else, then Washington has no control over the actions. So what the American government's been doing is been calling the bluff by saying, well, look, you know, if you forcibly disclose, we're going to have mass riots, and we're going to have absolute breakdown of law and order, and that's not what you want, is it? And they keep on citing, and although it's a long time ago, they keep on citing H.G. Wells radio, was it 1932, 1933, the War of the Worlds radio show, and they keep saying, look, how that met with absolute sheer panic. But what they don't, of course, say is that that was all planned and schemed for. So, yes, there's a massive amount of pressure for disclosure. And as far as I know, I would expect disclosure within 12 months. Okay.
Within 12 months. And disclosure and the event are the same thing?
No. The event, to me, is when humanity throws off its chains. When what we were talking about previously occurs, and everyone who's in business, big companies, have got to say, okay, right, we're going to have to change, because our method of operating is no longer ethical to the new value system. So the event is the ascension of humanity, but disclosure is part of that, is a very big part of it. Now, whether disclosure has to become before the event or whether disclosure comes after the event, that is hidden from me.
Okay, thank you. Even things are hidden from Simon. Hi again, Simon. This is from Sunshine. One more question. You explained how we are trapped by the net of the Matrix when we die, and that now it would be easier to escape from that net. My question is, our pets, with whom we have a very close relationships, are they also trapped in that Matrix net, or do they go directly to source when they die, and so are not seduced by the white tunnel light? Thank you for your insights, Stephanie.
Right, they are recycled, and that's why, and there'll be lots of people listening to the show tonight, know that they'll find an animal and they'll have a totally unearthly connection, or that animal will have a very, very special connection, and they can't really explain it, or they'll know that something's really, really unusual there. That is because the animals are recycled as well, because if you're a soul, you are a soul. It doesn't matter whether you're a rabbit or one of your chickens, JP, or a human. The difference is that the soul of a human operates at a much higher consciousness level, but it's still, just like the chicken soul, is captured and energy wiped. The difference is, I think, that animals, of course, are on a physical level much more primitive, and oddly enough, they resist the mind wipe easier than humans, because they're much more, they don't have so many other things in their life, shall we put it that way. So often an animal will actually know a person before the person knows an animal, and that animal has to work damn hard to get that person to respond to them. So yes, they are recycled.
Okay, so that's why you find, you know, you'll go to a cat's home and one will walk towards you, being, you know, oh, I know you.
it could be, on the other hand, it could be that the resonation of your soul is very similar to the frequency of that, the soul of that cat or that dog, and therefore that animal is drawn to it. It's the same way as if you, JP, went and had a swim with some dolphins. The dolphins would all come and visit you because the resonation or the frequency of your soul is almost identical to theirs. So if you go to a cat's or a dog's pound or charity, they may come to you because they recognise you, or they may come to you because they detect that there's a connection there in terms of the frequency.
Excellent, thank you. Because I think that's a really, many people are concerned about their companions, their pets, whatever you call them, and you know, it's especially with the wolf spirit we have with a lot of animal lovers. What cat's in the studio, by the way? What's the studio? What's your studio cat today?
Me?
Yeah.
Well, the tabby was here, and after you told her to stop biting me, she went off in a sulk.
Oh, sorry. What's her name?
Her name is Tani.
Tani.
And Tani was the name given to one of the goddess Freya from Norwegian mythology. And she had her chariot, which was allegedly pulled by white cats, you see, in Norse mythology. And Tani was one of the cats that pulled Freya's chariot.
Lovely. Thank you. Anyway. Actually, I was just reading this, and then this question from Sunshine came up. In one of your first interviews with Kerry Cassidy, you mentioned your love for your cats, and that you were very close to them. And if I remember correctly, you have several of them. My question, you're bound to your cats. Has this anything to do with your reptilian part?
And if yes, can you explain more about this? Thank you for your energy and time, Stephanie.
Well, thank you, Stephanie. That's very kind of you to say that. Because it does take a lot of energy to, you know, connect with people. Yes, to the unawake, and that's obviously nobody on this show listening to us, but to the unawake, people say to me, why have you got so many cats? And they're usually a little bit dismissive. And I say, you know what, my children have all grown up now, so, you know, they're like my children. And that keeps the 3D people really happy, and they can understand that, and that's all fine and good. The real reason is twofold. It's one, because cats have eyes like reptilians, and when you have spent all your childhood around a range of creatures, and some of those are reptilian, and they've never hurt you, therefore I don't consider them dangerous to me. They are dangerous to humanity, but they're not dangerous to me physically. Oh, it's quite nice to have those sort of eyes looking at me. The other aspect to it is that cats do contain a great deal of reptilian energy from the days a long time ago when they were genetically altered. It was part of a testing program. If you are going to operate on humans, you don't until you've operated on other creatures so that you get your practices and your processes about right. So that's what happens. And so cats obviously connect with the one-third reptilian in me, so cats are drawn to me. I rather like them. I have quite happy with dogs. I don't have a problem with dogs, but there's always in my life been with cats. That's my favourite one. So the answer is yes. It's a frequency thing. And it's just like you, JP, you'd probably want a pet dolphin.
It's interesting, actually. The first time I came to Scotland, just when we moved up here, and I walked out on the beach, and it was a particularly low tide, and it was really, really low, and I walked right out onto a sandbar, and there I was greeted by a pod of dolphins, and they were just playing around saying hi. So that was like my welcome to Scotland. I haven't seen them since, but that was then.
That's it.
Beautiful. So, here's another question from Shake Up. Dear Simon, how would you describe an Earth human given that we as a species carry so many genetic information and biology from many other alien beings? Can we truly call ourselves human now? Aren't we more accurately a hybridized shadow of our former selves? Not too unlike the human reptilian alien hybrids that exist today. Yes, good question.
It is a good question. There's a difference between the physical body, which we could say is hybridized or not, and the energy soul. So we have to immediately understand there are two separate things here. The physical body can contain a whole range of non-Earth human genetics, but they will be energy genetics. These will be changes made to the body so that it could maintain the type of soul that it's taking or it has at the moment. An Earth human, this is the point. I never get cross, but I just sometimes get somewhat frustrated because people use the term human inaccurately. You can be human on this planet, but not be an Earth human. And that's why this is a good question. So an Earth human, in my book, is a energy soul that is created by divine source. And it decides that it wants to come straight to planet Earth and incarnate into a baby, be born, and, you know, go through life. And that would be fine, except currently this is a prison planet. And if you arrive here straight from source with no other experience of this planet, it means you have no framework within which to double check or compare. So when your politician or your tax inspector or your police officer or what have you says, you can't do this, you say, oh yeah, okay, I'll do what I'm told because you're more important than I am. But if you were created by divine source and you went to another dimension, and then you came here, you have a framework from which you can compare and you can say, no, actually, that's not right. Or you're lying to me, that's not good. So Earth humans aren't stupid, they're naive. Those people who have come from somewhere else are the ones predominantly who are waking up, and they're the ones who are questioning. So you could be a Palladian-souled person in a human body. That's an earth human body, but it's a Palladian soul. So you are not an earth human, because your soul has come from the fifth dimension. So we'd expect somebody like that to be very much awake. But if you are somebody who has never questioned and really enjoys their job, and good luck to you if you do, but and you say it's a terrible world, but what can I do about it? And I must go to the supermarket, and I must do this, and I must remember to buy this, and I must do that, and oh, that's a nice thing, I've just seen that advert on television. Oh, I must go and get one of those. That's probably an earth human. And they're the ones that need to be really, and I don't mean it rudely, they need to be shocked, because they're going to need a big, big, big explosion or a big kick up the backside before they will actually say, hang on a minute, what's going on here? And these are the people who argue with us, who say, no, that's not true, you know, 9/11 was genuine and all the other things are genuine. Of course we went to the moon in 1969. But if I go back to the earlier point, they have no prior framework, and their belief is that nobody in power would deliberately lie to them. That's the naivety of it. You know, we elected these people. Of course they're going to be good. Why would they lie to us? You know, their job there is to help the people, and, you know, they're doing their best. That isn't stupidity, that's naivety. So I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, there's a very large difference between stupidity and naivety. Thank you. So that's that. All right. Oh, my God. Ask Simon any of these questions. No, I'm not going to ask. I'm not going to read through all these questions. Right, okay.
They're not flat earth questions.
No, but actually, this is an interesting one. All right. Okay, I'll read some, because they are good. Are the benevolent races aware of the reptilian energy web that surrounds the earth? Reptilian. Do they plan on doing anything to shut it down so that we can be free souls when you die? What are the chances that in the following years the energy will be taken down? And are there any other planets that have energy webs like our planets?
Right. The energy web that was placed around the planet is almost unique, because it was designated as a prison planet. The reptilian race has a hand in the operation of that net, but it's not the sole controlling organizer of it. There are holes appearing in the net now. I think we may have talked about this last session, I can't remember, but there are definitely holes appearing. I think the reptilians are just as much trapped as we are, hence that's why they would really enjoy a portal, because then they can get out without having to worry about the energy web. The web is energized predominantly from Saturn, and the repeating station, that's the technical term, or booster station might be a more easily understood word, on the far side of the moon, dark side of the moon, that is temporarily out of action. That means that the net around the Earth is pulsing at an irregular beat, and there are nodes of energy, which mean in other areas it's quite weak and quite thin, and therefore, literally, energy holes are appearing. So a very powerful being, either good or evil, could escape and go where they chose. So it's still operational. The reason it hasn't been taken down is because two things. The exact location of where this is coming from isn't known. And the other point is that this is this damned business about free will. You know, again and again and again, the argument has been used. Allegedly, we're a planet of 5, 6, 7, 8 billion people, and yet we are ruled by a tiny, tiny percentage. And the argument used is, well, the mass of people want us to do this to them. And I know that sounds absolutely ludicrous, but the argument is, if these people, the mass, the 8 million people, 8 billion people, I beg your pardon, didn't want us to do it, we wouldn't be able to do it. So they must want us to do it, because they've let us do it. Now, actually, when you are a very highly evolved person, so fifth, sixth, seventh dimension, there's years and years of argument there. You know, you can't just say, "Well, that's nonsense." But actually, this argument has been going on for thousands of years. When do you draw the line? When do the mass of people actually agree to something, and when do they not? And at the moment, you know, humanity is beginning to say, "No, we don't want this." So I think it's becoming clear that humans are changing from the last sort of few hundred years, anyway.
So, back to when you die, and you meet your loved ones. This is you know, the corollary. And the loved ones apparently say, "Oh, come and enter the light. Come with us." And it's a trap. Is that a trap? And you know, it's a really cruel trick, isn't it?
Yes. It's terrible. It's deception at the highest level. The thing is, you see, when a physical body dies, the soul has got some choices. Sometimes you can be so attached to somebody or a place that you don't leave. Especially if somebody is in a critical, you know, part of their life, and you've been the guardian of that person, and you want them to do something, then you may not leave, and you will stay around so that you can advise that person through very subtle means. Or, you know, that's what people call a ghost. Or you can ascend and be recycled and then come back into another body. Or you can ascend or be in the what's called a freeze box and held for a few hundred years or thousand years and then put back. Or you can be really, really strong, find a weakness through the net, get out, and either return to source or to your star family. So there are options depending on the circumstances and the individual.
Okay, back to the CC questions. And this is a question, hang on, let me just check. People are asking millions of questions, and it was slightly different. For instance, you know, when other intelligent beings die, do they have the light, or do they just know what's going to happen next? Is it just like stepping out of the body?
Does the questioner mean intelligent beings on this planet or separate?
And, you know, somebody else, you know, humans, let's say humans that are non-Earth, that live on, Taygeta 4 or something, you know, some other habitable Earth-like planet that doesn't have an archonic grid, what happens when they die?
Well, they either go back to a source, or they go back to the star family. And is that, you know, in an energy format? I mean, the reality is that you, outside of this grid, you have the choice into which body you will incarnate into. Now, if you're coming from source, you can incarnate in any of the dimensions. But if you are in a fifth dimensional body or a fourth dimensional body, and there's a net around you, you have lost that free will because you are recycled back. But, you know, if you are a third or a fourth dimensional soul, then you will reincarnate back in the third or fourth dimension. If you're fifth dimension, you'll be in the fifth dimension. So it's about your star family and where you're connected to most. We're very social creatures. We generally don't like to be on our own, so we like to be part of a family. And it's in a different way than we understand it on a 3D planet. It's a communication, a feeling of love, a feeling of being with people that are very special to you. And of course, in the 3D, where we have so much physicality, sadly, to some extent, some people anyway, have lost that connection. And that's why over the last 30 years, we've seen the breakup of many families. You know, I'm of an age now where I can remember the 1970s, and people would sit round and play a game of Monopoly. Well, it may not be the best game in the world, but, you know, that's what they would play, and they would do stuff together, or they would go to the cinema. Well, through the advent of technology, and also through the advent of the culture of self, we've seen the fragmentation. Well, I had some research done in this country to show something like only 15 to 20% of families eat a meal together. because they're all in their own rooms or they're all doing other things. So that's a weakening of what is a natural aspect. Humans naturally should be part of a group. So technology deliberately, in my estimation, is trying to fracture people away from the natural connections and trying to make people individual, because if you are individual, you can be picked off. You don't have support networks, you don't have someone else to bounce an idea off. If you are very isolated and individual in your concepts and your thoughts, you can be manipulated. So I see it as part of a deliberate policy by the artificial intelligence, the AI, which is mankind or humankind's greatest enemy, part of their assault upon humanity.
Wow. So, yeah, pick us up, you know, pull us apart and then pick us off. CC member, I want to ascend. Canada. I was going to try not to say it Canadian, but I did. Canada was supposed to pull our troops out of the war, but instead Trudeau sent more in and is doing more than Canada should be doing. How corrupt is Justin Trudeau? Yep.
Well, that's the question.
Yeah, how corrupt is Trudeau? He's a politician.
Yeah. No, I can't comment on how corrupt he is, because on the third world sense, in the third dimensional self, corruption usually means taking money. And I don't know whether he is or not, so I can't say he's corrupt. If the question is asking me, is his soul compromised? What I would say is his organic brain is compromised, because many of these countries that are inextricably linked to the United States know that unless they do the bidding of the elite in America, then situations will happen. You know, you might have an attack on the Parliament building, you'll have a lone gunman, and these things look all isolated and random. But these attacks are not designed in many ways to frighten and terrorize the population. They're there to put pressure on the government. If the government is, many governments are trying to move away from the dollar, and they're having very tentative talks with foreign countries. And of course, the United States doesn't like that. So it's easy, perhaps, on one hand, for a country like Canada to send extra troops, because that keeps the Americans happy on one side. But, you know, quietly, I'm using the term deliberately, because I know Canada has lots of beavers that build dams. So they're beavering away at the back door, trying to make friends outside of America. So it's a big tightrope game going on right across the world, as publicly countries are falling in line with America, but privately they are seeking to get out as quickly as possible. So I would say that's a very cheap and easy, from a politician's position, to send more troops.
Wow. Okay. From there to this. Is it possible for anyone to learn channeling so we can communicate with our star families, or do we have to have a certain quality? And there's a kind of linked question, which I think is linked anyway, is that are there any at-home tests to see what DNA strands we're drawing down or more connected with them than others?
Well, it'd be lovely if there was a litmus test and you could tear off a piece of paper and, you know, tap it on you and see what colour it went and say, oh yes, you know I'm this.
How do you tell?
Right, well, hang on, I'll finish with this one and okay. Then I'll come back with that. You can't do that simply because you are trying to use a 3D method to divine something that is not of this three-dimensional world. So, you know, that doesn't happen. You can only do it when you have someone who's psychic. The question is a good question, but it has dangerous connotations to it. I personally wouldn't recommend anybody actively trying to channel, because there's no guarantee that you will channel your star family. If you go back to the days in Germany before the Second World War, the Thrule Society and the Vril Society both had women in charge of these organizations, and they were channeling what they believed to be a benevolent off-world group. I certainly think it was off-world, but I don't believe it to be beneficial. And so, if you're not actually a channeler, this is not the best way to connect with your star family. If you're already channeling, well, then you're already channeling and it was meant to be, but you still may not be channeling your star family. So how do I do it? When I look at somebody physically with my eye, I also look at them energetically. And I can feel more than see, because I don't actually see aura colours. I don't see colours for aura. I can't do that. But I can detect the individual strands of energy DNA and which types they are and which ones are in abeyance, which ones are being held off, generally because the person hasn't reached out to collect them. And I do that on a non-physical basis. It's not the same, but it's the same principle as a healer who can heal somebody without using any drugs or anything physical. They use the power of their mind to overcome the damage that's occurred to that individual. Now, I'm not using my mind to overcome damage. I'm using my mind to actually divine the connection that individual has to source and, you know, how many strands they've actually got activated. So it's just another aspect of a skill that actually many people have, but most people have drawn to the healing because it's physical. You can I know people who can actually heal bones and not just remove implants or stuff like that. So everyone who has a skill, it's all rooted in the same divine source type connection, but it's how we would go with it and how we tweak it and how we use that. So I don't really recommend the channeling route. It's too open to being taken over. Okay.
Thank you. So there's no way that people can find out for themselves how many DNA strands they've got activated. Is there any, can they use dowsing and things like that to do so?
Well, I can't say that there must be some people who have the ability, but the problem is, you know, ego being what it is, you say, oh, I've got 12 strands, oh, I've got 11 strands, and you know, that's what you want to say. So whether you would actually be able to overcome that, I'm not sure. The dowsing is a good way. You can ask questions. You'd have to have the person lying on a bed, and then you'd have to have the pendulum, if that's what you use for the dowsing, over one of the chakras. But there again, it's difficult because you'd have to take many readings. When I look at somebody, I don't just focus in on a narrow beam, which is how a dowsing needle or usually works. I scan the wide body, so sort of from the chest area upwards to the head. So if you were going to douse with a pendulum, you'd have to take many readings around that person. But theoretically, I don't see why it wouldn't work.
Good. So there you go. You can grow your own DNA test. Okay, so here's a mem. This is from Sherin Kang Yong. These are personal questions. Has Simon had a split soul in every reincarnation, and can you biolocate remote view and read minds?
What a very clever question. I believe I originally had two parts to a soul, reptilian and human. And then in this particular lifetime, the mantis or mantid part was added. I believe it was added because this is a very important manifestation for me. It's a very important time for all of us, and I believe that the element was added for that. Can I read minds? Not really, no. Can I remote view? Yes, I can. I remote viewed Washington, the Pentagon, and I went down underground, and I found a grey. And the little horrible creature chased me out. So I don't remote view since then because I was drawing attention to myself in a way that, you know, wasn't particularly beneficial. obviously I wasn't supposed to be there, but I was very interested to see what was going on under the Pentagon. Who wouldn't be? What I found was very interesting, and I can understand why they didn't want me seeing that. So the reason I stopped doing remote viewing was simply because being the person I am and the work I do, it was an aspect that I didn't need to do it, and if I did do it, it brought me into conflict, and I've got quite enough going on as it is.
Thank you. A little corollary from that, Stephen D. Kelly, whose show is at later o'clock, he was invited into a underground base in the Smithsonian, underneath the Smithsonian, and not the Smithsonian, the Getty Museum, and he said that there was a room that he was told had a bunch of remote viewers who were psychically protecting the base. And I imagine that that's something that goes back all the way to the Nazis and their stuff when they discovered this kind of thing.
Well, that's a very interesting topic, because even people who are researchers of our subjects don't seem to get a handle on what's going on. There are still people out there who think that the CERN Hadron Collider is just what the official body say it is, and I did my talk in Newcastle a couple of weeks back to really try to explain to people that it isn't just what they say it is. That was protected by remote viewers. The Hadron Collider had remote viewers protecting it, not externally but internally. All sensitive portals or sensitive artifacts, and the reason either the Smithsonian Institute would have done, like the Getty Museum, any of those have remote viewers, because they hold sacred objects which are themselves not in the third dimension. So, for instance, let's push the boat out here. In Scotland, there's a place called Rosslyn Chapel. And Rosslyn Chapel has remote viewers guarding it 24/7, because it has objects hidden out of phase. And so wherever you have sacred objects or documents, and you know that the other side is going to try and read those documents or try to steal the objects, you don't put burglar alarms and laser beams, because that doesn't stop a human or another consciousness coming in. You have to block it with another consciousness, and that's what these people do, and they are employed in groups. And you know, this is you know, we're nearly up to Christmas, and you stand on a high street in Great Britain, and you see people busily with their what we call in Britain carrier bags, but I think what the Americans call carry-alls, and they go from one shop to the next, and they're really focused, and some people's got a shopping list, but most people haven't. And you think, do you know what? If you could actually look and see that there are organisations, and not just government, they are corporations, who are employing people who sit round in a circle, and their job is to project their mind to either go look at things or to hover around things, these people would be shocked. They just don't accept that is the case. And that's why governments wish to keep this secret, because as long as the vast majority of the public don't have any concept of their capabilities, they'll never rock the boat. If you were to say to people, and they could be convinced that they had the ability to create energy over matter, the whole world would change. And this is what we mean by the event, people actually understanding it. So I'm not at all surprised that remote viewers are there. It's generally because there's something hidden out of reality. Okay.
That's very interesting. We'll have to expand on that another time. So, let's see. It would be wonderful, from Sohani Gonzalez, to have some solutions to the various New World Order plans. Are there solutions we can all be given to help us? Whether it's protective technology or ways to detox the nano bits from our system. And by the way, talking of nano, have you come across Daniel D. McBoylan?
The name's
He's the guy who's been talking about CERN and whether it's being burning itself out or not, and whether it's travelling backwards and forwards in time and all sorts of things. A very interesting fellow. I had him on the other week.
Oh, shame I missed that.
By the way, we're coming up to the top of the hour. Well, past it. I'm going to play a song by one of the members of CC, which is by Doug Auld, it's a rather beautiful song. I'm not going to have Sean. She's very busy this afternoon, Sean Unfused. Well, she'll be coming back in February, I think. Until that time, enjoy Doug's tune, which is called The Open Prayer. And welcome back to Connecting Consciousness with Simon Parks. And I am JP, your host. We are inundated, flooded, tsunamied with questions from all sorts of angles. So let's go back to the CC group. And here we go. Right. Now, here's a very good question. This is Andromedan Kai. I have a very dear friend who is a reptilian hybrid with a higher human soul. She is bloodline and has had Anunnaki incarnations. Her internal struggles are obvious, and I empathically pick up on these. I've heard you call these people brave. What do you mean exactly?
When somebody has bloodline connections and they have been physically prepared for a particular type of soul, they generally would replicate the control matrix. But when somebody makes a choice for good and overcomes the programming, and I don't mean mind control programming, I mean, you know, hundreds of thousands of years of a particular mindset through the soul's memory, when that person makes a choice for good, then they're very brave, because what they've done is they've turned their back on some aspects of the culture of the main part, the main element of their star family. Because if you are a reptilian and yet you make a choice for good, it means that you have decided that the values and way of life for your star family are not very beneficial for humanity, and therefore you want no part of it. But you can't turn your back on all of the culture, but you can just turn it on back on the negative part. So that's a very brave soul, a very brave person. So that's what I mean by that.
Great, thank you. My guide said something of that sort of ilk. All right, so here's another. Here's another, what they call a chestnut. You mentioned earlier in another talk that twin souls, or soulmates, is there a distinction as well? That's another thing. Can find each other. Are there countermeasures to stop this? And if so, whom is interfering?
I've not had that question before. Soulmates, twin flames, it's very true. Absolutely true. Don't doubt that at all.
Can you distinguish between them? There does seem to be a distinction between someone who's a twin flame and someone who's a soulmate.
Right. Initially, I thought, personally, I mean, you're right. Initially, I thought it was just an Americanism as opposed to a Britishism. But the reality is that if you're a soulmate, then you are somebody who has a consistent, ongoing, close relationship with an individual whenever you incarnate into different physical bodies. If you're a twin flame, it is possible that you are coming from the same energy source. So in other words, if you can think of an energy soul that is spliced or divided and creates two elements, one is male generally and one is female, although they might not be in the same gender bodies. So a twin flame could mean one individual who is split into two different parts, whereas a soulmate very clearly is somebody who is superbly connected to someone else and has been through many different incarnations.
Wow, that's a very very interesting dichotomy. And of dichotomy, do souls only bifurcate? Do they collect into threes, fours, and have like multiple twin, you know, triple flames?
Not to my knowledge. Simply because the energies of the world are male and female, and of the universe, so there are two sorts of energy like that. Whenever you have physical, when a woman has physical twins or quads or triplets, whatever, sometimes those twins contain the same soul that's been divided, and that's very, very interesting, and that's usually someone who's very psychic can pick up on that. That's why the negative forces, the evil people, are very interested in twins, children and babies, because of this divine energy that resides within them. So I think it's quite clear that a soulmate is a soulmate, but a twin flame can be a soul that's been split either by source, because that would normally where I would expect the soul to be split at source, but I don't rule out the possibility that someone else could be doing it. Now, the final part of the question, yes, there are two sides to every argument. One side would be attempting perhaps to put people together. That could be source. Source is saying that, you know, these two always get together. They won't actually be happy on their own unless they're together. So divine source wants those two to be together. But you may have a negative force. It doesn't have to be alien. It could be an elite human force who really don't want these two people to work together or be together, because they are really strong when they're together. You imagine if you had a scientist and a very spiritual person, and they got together, well, the scientist would begin to change his or her science and would expand. And so that scientist might well leave the 3D pattern, the 3D world, and begin to look into aspects that have been long lost. But if you were to keep that other element away from them, they would just carry on doing the normal 3D run of the science. So when two people work together, they can actually be really, really powerful, either for good or for ill. So there's a big operation like a chessboard, chess game going on, trying to keep people together or split them up.
Right, and the last corollary for that, do we actually have to have a twin flame, or can we just happily have normal relationships? Is it possible just to have a normal relationship these days without having to be a twin flame or a soulmate or a this or a that? You know, because there's so much around this, and, you know. I know.
Look, let's just put it this way. Let's not go too far back. Let's go 400 AD, Roman Empire. And let's say that you are going to the marketplace, and then you meet a really nice guy. Let's be a guy. I'm always saying meet a really nice woman. Let's meet a really nice guy. And the woman really likes the guy, because we're going to use these two people as if they're straight. And they get into a relationship, and they die. Physical body dies. But they are so connected that they want to find that other person. And let's say they both reincarnate in Italy. So, you know, they find each other again. And each time they find each other, the magnetism, the strength grows and grows until that individual, and it's usually the female, the male usually incarnates on the planet first, not exclusively, but normally does, and he acts like a lighthouse and sends out his frequency, and the female then finds that frequency. Now, it's really difficult if the guy is travelling about all over the place, lives 5 years in Australia and then 5 years in Britain, because it throws the pattern. But what happens time and time again is that in the soulmate situation, one partner finds the other. Where it's very, very difficult is when one person remembers who that other one is and the other one has no memory. You know, how do you go up to someone and say, listen, we've been together 5 or 6 times, do you remember in ancient Rome? And they look at you as if you're absolutely round the twist. So it only works when both parties have enough memory to be able to convince themselves. They'll know they're connected. They'll know and they feel really close to this person. But until you get a personal bit of memory that connects you with that individual at some past history, then it can't work. In terms of, can you have a decent relationship without that? Of course you can. Of course you can. But if you have a very strong memory, you will always think, this isn't the right person. You know, I know there is somebody out there for me, and I haven't found them yet. This person isn't right. So that's where it's really heartbreaking. And if that person never finds the other soulmate, then they don't ever have a fulfilling relationship. But yes, it's perfectly okay to find other relationships if you don't have a soul family, a soulmate, I beg your pardon. But that's a really good question. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for answering and clarifying a lot of that, because it abounds so much, and it feels like there are many people who are just like, well, I'm waiting for my twin flame, and then I can get going. And, you know, that sort of thing. Anyhow, Simon, this is from Brad Boyer. And this is really relevant. And my commiserations to all my friends who are listening, who have lost near and dear ones recently. So, Simon, both my mother and my father died this year. And I've had many friends, close and distant, losing loved ones. Is there any reason so many are passing so quickly and unexpectedly? And is there anything we can do to help the more vulnerable transition through the changes the world seems to be going through, so they are still either with us or their passings are easier for them?
Dolores Cannon, if she were here physically, would be able to answer that question very well, actually. Many, many people are leaving at this time because they've done what they needed to do. The Earth is moving into a very different energetical signature, and we're seeing that in the physical 3D world playing out almost every day on the television or the radio, the newspapers. But many people now are saying, it's moved into the next phase, and I am not here to play a role in this phase. I was here for the last 50, 60, 70, 80, 90 years, and I played my part, and I am leaving so that others can come in who have a different energy frequency, and they are going to move, hopefully, fingers crossed, with the Earth as we make the changes. So he's right, there are many people, and I should do a Freedom of Information Act, actually, because I think that more people are passing across the planet now than almost in any time in our history, other than, obviously, wars and pestilence. But in peacetime, I think a lot of people are going because they've done their time, they've served it, they've done what they needed to do. It's time for the next group to come in. So it's a good question.
Oh, wow. I mean, in a way, that's a really comforting thing. It's not like there's a terrible tragedy going. It's like, okay, shift's over, let's bring the new fresh ones in, because they'll have a little more spirit, you know. Okay, well, sorry, go ahead.
Very quickly, though, I would also, I can't get this on Freedom Information, but I would like to look at the makeup of the star families of those who are passing, and I would suggest that there is a larger proportion of reptilian soul people passing now, because the energy is not, so these are for reptilian people who have not become aware, they've not become spiritual, they're still living the life that they have, and I think that the energies are changing. And so it's not comfortable for them anymore. They're not at peace. They're continually angry or annoyed. And I think they're the ones that are quite happy to go. And so they will be replaced by either reptilian-souled people who are enlightened and want to be beneficial. And more likely, they're going to be replaced by higher human-type souls. So I just wanted to add that.
Yeah, great. I mean, this is important clarity here. Now, here's a very interesting question, and many people ask this question. I would be grateful for Simon if he could talk, this is from Luca Pellegrini, if you could talk about the origin and history of the Earth human races, Caucasian, African, Chinese, Indian. It's hard to find information on this topic. So, yeah, how many are there? Was there a plan? Is it free for all? Is it, you know, do people belong here and not belong here? What's the situation with?
What we need is an anthropologist. I had a really good book. I probably still got it somewhere. It was a Time Life book from the 60s, and in fact, I have got it. And on the back cover, on the two back pages, it had a map of all the continents, and then wonderful drawings of the stereotypical face of the type of person. So there are about 50 different individual drawings of people, and an arrow and a line showing which part of the world they'd come from. You couldn't do it now because it would be declared racist, but it was very, 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 very useful, and I hung on to that. And it begs the question whether this is a 3D evolutionary type of change, or whether there's something much more powerful that has gone on in the past or is going on at the moment. I never ever laugh at the Bible. I'm always very, very respectful, because therein lies truth. And in the story of the Tower of Babel, where mankind decided to build a tower to challenge God, well, that is nonsense. But the challenge might not be nonsense. Everybody spoke the same language, and then the story goes that God smote the tower down and broke everyone up into different tribes, and they each spoke different languages. Therefore, they could never coordinate easily together again. And, you know, it's proven biologically that if you come from a country that's bathed in hot sun many hours of the day, your pigmentation in your skin will change. So I'm more interested in what's inside that physical body, because you could be a yellow-skinned person, then you could have a Palladian soul in you. You could be a black-skinned person and have a Lyran soul. So we do have to accept that biological organisms, biological bodies, will adapt and change to the environment around them. What I don't accept is Charles Darwin's evolution of species, because I do not believe there was enough time given in the fossil record to go from allegedly a monkey swinging through a tree to somebody who can build and create the technology of a mobile phone. So I do accept that skin colour, face shape change is directly related to the environment that you're in and the type of food you eat, etc. But I don't believe that has any impact on the soul within your body. So I hope that's an answer.
Wow, thanks. Because, yeah, you know, curly hair and dark eyes, that kind of pushes right through the DNA line. You know, it's very difficult to breed that into blue eyes and straight hair. Right. Okay, right. There's a go. Okay, so this is Yoria. It seems that all I'm hearing about are alien races that are here at this time to fulfill their own agendas, which seem to be mostly negative. Where are the ETs, EDs, that have come here at this time to help this planet and the human race for no other reason than they are a loving race and want to help where help is needed? So far, all I've heard about are the aliens that are either trying to enslave us, waiting around to pick up the pieces, or waiting to ride the wave of human evolution to the next dimension. Those are not the traits of an advanced race. There must be alien races advanced enough... Oops, I've lost my page. Advanced enough who act out of pure love. What are those stars' families, and where are they?
It's actually a very reasonable question. But it is unfortunately to miss the point about free will. If you have an ant's nest, and the ants can't possibly get over this earth barrier to build their tower, shall we say, and you help to build the tower for them, they won't be grateful, they won't do anything, they'll just find they can carry on over the tower and off they go. And that's what you would do, because you would help them, because they are lesser creatures. Humans are not lesser creatures. They have the ability to understand, to think, and to create. So therefore, if you consistently keep helping them, humans will sit down in an armchair, cross their arms and their legs and say, right, okay, I want this, please. Just do it for me. And that's the problem that we have. We have the fact that humans, if they believe that something will be done for them, why should they do it? Now, anyone who's had children will know that in most cases, if a child thinks an adult's going to do something, it'll just sit and wait. From talking to a number of old married couples, I understand that the man always waits for the woman to start the cooking, and if she doesn't cook, he starves. So the point I'm making, that's obviously in jest, but the point I'm making is that there has been a lot done, but what's been done has been balancing the books. If there was a huge battle in space and the bad guys were vanquished And then the good guys came down and said, "We have saved you." The problem is, somebody would say, "Oh, you lead us, please." And if you know the Lord of the Rings, Gandalf is offered the Ring of Power and says, "No, no, no, I don't want to take it." Because if you take something, you set yourself up as a god. You set yourself up as something perhaps that you're not meant to be. So these creatures, these higher humans, who have a lot more knowledge than we do and a lot more comprehension of history than we do, are very unwilling to be perceived in the physical world to be taking a huge step towards that, simply because humans may abdicate their responsibility and then sit on their backside and say, "Right, you do it all for us, please." Or they might say, "Look, we can't run ourselves, we're useless, you run the life for us." Now, how's that evolution? So my answer to the question is, we have been helped. A number of underground bases, not all of them, but a number have been totally made inoperable. A number of very high-ranking individuals on the planet are no longer holding the position that they once did. Time and time again, this planet has been on the edge of a terrible catastrophe of a war, and these alien races have come in. People won't be aware of this, but some 20-odd years ago, 25 years ago, a American aircraft was on a practice running mission, and it had a live nuclear bomb which somehow fell out of the bomb bay. It fell out of the bomb bay, hit the ground, did not explode. When the American technicians got to it, they found all but one of the fail-safe devices had failed, and just the very last fail-safe device had been prevented it from detonating and blowing up an American city. So we need to understand that there is substantial help, but it is not in the presence of the human eyes. It's not. If I saw a situation and I saw someone come and save me, and I think, "Oh, well, that's all right, I don't have to struggle anymore," because every time there's a difficult situation, someone else will come and do it. And that's why, along with Fran, I created Connecting Consciousness. The whole point of that was to demonstrate to Source and to benevolent off-planet entities that there is a sizable proportion of humanity that no longer wants to sit in the armchair and just muse about things. It actually wants to go out there and do something positive to help. So Connecting Consciousness, and there are other groups as well that I'm probably not familiar with, who have sent their energy for positive intent. And, you know, what they're doing is actually showing the wider world that humanity is prepared to make an effort. So it's a good question, and I hope that was a good answer.
Wow. And these are the things that they make science fiction programs of, like Doctor Who, because he's always saving the world and yet not ever recognized. He's never in the news, and sometimes no one but he has experienced it or remembers it, because everybody's he winds time back so nobody gets killed anymore. And nobody remembers the terrible trauma that only he remembers. It's clear.
Well, it's partly that, but there's something else to it as well. Especially the later Doctor Who's. You see lots and lots of spaceships above the centre of London or New York, and big battles happening. But the people don't remember it, and in many cases it's because they don't want to remember it. They want their old familiar, nice, safe life. And I have always said it, if you put a flying saucer above a major city for 3 days, there would be total panic and pandemonium. Take the flying saucer away and everybody would go back to the supermarket. In other words, that's gone now, we'll get back to the life. Because that's not the event. That's not a spiritual challenge and spiritual change. That isn't something that makes someone look deep within themselves to say, "How do I need to change? What is the world around me? What is this fundamental difference between good and evil?" And that can only happen when an individual is forced to look into themselves, to recognize the good and the bad, and to let go of the bad, and to make the change. So it's not going to be from a very physical way. Change has got to come, as you said, slowly, because people need not to be lost. We don't want to lose people. We want them to grow and to develop like an acorn grows into a tree. I'm sorry, I'm waffling on, JP. Let's have the next question.
Actually, I just wanted a quick... what you're talking about, to me, is like, you know when you charge up your mobile phone?
Yeah.
It takes several hours.
Yeah, it does.
If you had... And this is called internal resistance, and the battery has internal resistance. But if you had another form of technology, which was like what we call a capacitor, then it would charge instantly from a flash, a lightning bolt. And see, just like that. And if you're clear, then you're more like a capacitor. But as we've been entrenched in the 3D... brainwashing, conditioning, traumatic world, we have more internal resistance, and so it takes us a longer while to charge up fully. How about that for an analogy?
Fantastic. It must be good, because a thunderbolt came down and nearly hit me.
Holy God. Really?
No, I just...
Anyway... now this is from Bono, who's talking about who's asking questions about your readings. So you better make. I think there's an announcement, because you know there are people who are. It's backing up a bit, I think. That he's booked a reading and that hasn't got a follow up.
Hasn't got a what?
A follow up. Any you know confirmation?
So he had a reading booked and it got missed.
Yes.
Yeah, I've had real problems with messages going missing, particularly on Skype, you know, sort of not coming through and then suddenly coming through in a group and then being totally missed. If that's not happened, then please can they just don't send it to the website, because we've had to lock that down, but if they can just send a written message on Skype, and I'm checking regularly twice a day now, every morning and every afternoon, and I'll pick it up that way.
Okay, thanks, Simon, because I have to say, and you know, again, I want to say to people, there is only one way to get questions to this program, and it's 1 2-hour session a month, and it's through the chat room that exists on Wolf Spirit Radio. We have thousands of other shows all the rest of the month, so please don't send questions for Simon or Alex Collier to my emails or my Skype or... send me letters. Well, I mean, the letters are nice. Thank you. It's nice. But basically, you know, we got too many questions. Just ask. It's come here and ask them. This is for the people who are listening on YouTube as well. If you ask a question on YouTube, it will never even be seen. It won't even be answered. I'm just far too busy for that. So, okay. Meanwhile. Hang on, let's have a quick meanwhile. No, I can't do a quick meanwhile.
No more Christmas Eve jingles.
No, not even this. No, all I've got is... That's my only meanwhile. The Batman one. here's another one. This is from Delia. Hello, dear Simon. Is there a link between the bloodlines and the blood types, rhesus positive and negative? Or can you describe where the rhesus negative comes from? Or if you're far, you know, what's the deal? Does it make people special, or is it just completely like a random slice that enlightened people are rhesus negative as well as positive? You know what I mean?
Right. No, it doesn't make anybody special. What makes people special is when they, you know, stop to help someone across the road, or they assist a disabled person, or if there's a very old person and the weather's really bad and they go around and buy them some food and milk and make sure they're okay. That's what makes people special. So the bloodline is a physical thing. It's created by a reptilian mindset that basically said that we want to put what we consider to be special souls into special bodies. And I've used the quote many times before. Jesus said that you don't put new wine into old wine sacks. In other words, you don't put the soul of somebody who was Tutankhamun into a physical body of a blue eye, fair haired, etc. So they are linked. And once you understand that, then you begin to understand how the elite recruit people, and when you're looking at organizations that start to, you know, you start to look up towards the top of those organizations, you begin to see similarities. So the physical body usually matches the soul. When it doesn't, you've got problems, because one tries to reject the other. I can't think really what else to say. I mean, well, the rhesus negative, we talked about the rhesus monkey. You know, it's the rhesus monkey and the rhesus blood. There's a person who could go on Google and have a look at that. There might be some interesting research there for you. But ultimately, green eyes mean bloodline. Blue eyes mean higher human. And then you've got all the mixtures in between, sort of greys and grey blues and all the other colours. So rhesus negative is a indicator. I can't say it's genuine. It's an indicator that somebody may have other traits. If you were to, and I haven't got the official, only anecdotal, but the number of people who claim abductions or visits by off-world entities, a very large proportion of them have rhesus negative blood. So whether it's true or not, the fact is that the elite believe it. So, you know, if you are a female with certain eye colouring, certain hair colouring, then you are more likely to obtain a job in an elite organisation. If you're Marilyn Monroe, then you are more likely to get a job in the entertainment industry. And that's because these value system runs through the command and control of the corporations and the multinationals just as much as it does through magical groups. Okay.
Wow. Excellent answer. Thank you, Simon. Being a blue-eyed, rhesus positive is very welcoming to know. Actually, that they wouldn't want me anyway, so that's great.
No, but you could be Father Christmas.
Ho, bloody ho. This is from ZC member Georgia. Actually, my beard is not it's kind of long and pointy at the moment. It's not kind of big and round like the, like Santa. Yeah, and it's my hair's still dark. I know. It's like, anyway, this is from Georgina. Come on, Simon. What are your suggested meditation techniques and tips? Meditation tips and techniques for those with reptilian souls.
Very good question. Hurrah. Yes. Well done.
Yes, thank you.
Right. It's very, very difficult for, it's not impossible, but it's incredibly difficult for people with a sizable amount of reptilian to meditate. And that, people might be shaking their heads and thinking, why? But it just is. It's really difficult. So what you've got to do, you've got to connect to source, you've got to connect to the planet, and you've got to find a way that is not the traditional meditation, but nevertheless brings you stillness of your soul. Now that may not mean physical stillness. If you look at the way that the accepted way of meditating, that doesn't necessarily work. So what I often say to people is, find something that interests you, and that's not the shopping channel or what have you, but find something that's to do with nature, the earth, and get out and do that and use that. So someone, say for instance, let's pick a really difficult one. Someone takes an interest in fungi, toadstools and mushrooms. So go out into the world and look and try and commune with the earth and the planet, because this is energy that you're wanting to connect with. Reptilian energy generally is quite aggressive, and that's not what you want to connect with. So it's trying to find something that doesn't play to that, but reinforces the loving aspect, the connecting aspect, the part of a group aspect. And if you can go out away from your home, then that is your form of mental relaxation. I'm not saying that's the answer to it, but I'm saying that's the first step. And once you get that stillness, then you have to transition to what is expected to be the normal form of meditation. So it's, you can't go 0 to 60 if you're a reptilian. You have to do it gradually. So find something that you're interested in, find something that is connected to the earth, and gradually move yourself towards the more accepted form of meditation. Okay.
That's marvelous, because everybody needs some help somewhere, you know?
Yes.
Okay, meanwhile, again, I've got at least four sources of questions for the moment. Okay, here we go. Oh, this is a good one, and we're coming towards the end of the show, so we'll be back in a month after, a very intense month. So, this is from Delia again. Can you tell more about the Kilroti or Ketkari? You said they are originally from Orion. They have a hierarchy, a queen, or something. Is it like the pyramid system like we have here on Earth? And in the sense of bad, from our perspective, do they... Oh, sorry, yeah, that's it. Do they have a hierarchy like queens?
They do have a hierarchy, yeah. But it's very simple. Originally, this is interesting because it's about how to head off revolution at the path. Napoleon, interesting, just slightly diversify a bit, Napoleon Bonaparte actually said that the reason that the English, the British, would never have a revolution like the French did was because Britain was a nation of shopkeepers. In other words, the middle class. So the working class, instead of having a revolution, were always aspiring to be a shop owner, and the shop owner was always aspiring to be somebody higher up. Therefore, there was no time for revolution because there was just enough glimpse of a ladder for you to be able to potentially climb up. In the French, in France, where so many people were poor, and there was no middle class, it was just the aristocracy and the poor, therefore it collapsed. Now, with the Ketkari, you have the elite, it's a matriarchal system, so it's queens. There are kings, but they don't have any power. They're just figureheads. So you have queens, and then you had everybody else. And that was going the way of the French Revolution. So they created, very cleverly, a middle class. And these were the people who served the elite, the royalty. And so you have royalty, and then a sizable portion of the working class who'd been moved up to service the rulers, and then the others. So that's they have three, a tier of three. Originally coming from Orion, and we would call them the lions, or if you really want to be clever, you call them the flying lions. Stuart Swerdlow is the only other person I have met who... No, that's not true. Stuart Swerdlow and one other person, so there's three people who I have met who have genuinely experienced these creatures. So the flying lions from Orion originally, excuse me, and then there was a split, and a large portion of the population moved and went to a planet in the Sirius or Sirius star system and set up camp. And after many, many years, they had evolved so much that they no longer had the same culture as the original group, and they took the name Ketkari because they wanted to differentiate themselves. But they hold, and they still do, they hold the original lineage, the lion energy, and they venerate it. So it's like, I don't know, it's like a religion almost to them, that they know they have connected there. They are connected predominantly with the pyramids on Mars. They did play a role with the pyramid construction in what's Giza in Egypt. I'm not saying they built them, but they had a definite connection, and there are many, many people who I've spoken to who have connection either to the lions or the Ketkari, and are fascinated by Egypt, fascinated by the pyramids, and that is because on the soul level, DNA level, they are connecting. And the other thing which is rather sweet, rather nice, is that when they have children, and they do have children, they only have twins. So the concept of just having one child is crazy to them.
They have litters.
They have twos. Well, I don't know, litters. They don't call them litters. You get a slap round the face with a wet fish if you say that. But they have two children. And when I've seen them, and it's probably a story worth just basically recounting, and I picked up one of these children, and it went crazy. and I was really like, oh, what's, you know, and I said to the mother, you know, why is the child behaving like that? And the reply was, because the child has never been picked up like that. And they treat their children like adults. So on planet Earth, in the Western world, we almost believe we own children. In fact, we have a law that says until someone's 18, or some of the American states, isn't it, 21 or 25 or something, they're still kids. So you're responsible legally for them. Not emotionally. Here's how it's moved, and it's very dangerous and damaging. Because you should be emotionally responsible for your children, to support them and give them the tools they need. But it's all moved to it legally. If your child does something wrong, you're legally responsible. If they don't go to school, you're legally responsible. Well, that's just BS, because it doesn't work like that. And in other words, the child that I picked up would never have been picked up by any of its parents, because you wouldn't pick an adult up like that. So why do we pick children up? Oh, because they're children and they don't count. So we pick them up and throw them up in the air, or we play what have you. But of course their concept, although they're fourth dimensional, but their concept of children and their value of children is frankly different. And I have been told on more than one occasion that humans treat their children appallingly, and that is why when you get real hybridized children that are taken from the parents, they're not left here on Earth, because they believe that the way those hybridized babies would be looked after is disgraceful. So the reason they take these hybridized kids away is because they don't want them to be contaminated by the values on the planet Earth. And there are many, many mothers who are very distressed when their hybrid children are taken away. But the main reason is because although the mother would be very loving, the system would actually undo all the work that the off-planet group were looking for. Anyway, we could say much more on that, but we're running out of time.
Wow. Now, that's very interesting. I mean, that's a whole show, you know, how our off-planet cousins, and particularly our higher humans, bring up their children. I remember Alex Collier talking about it, and you know that Andromedan kids don't leave school till 70. Not 17, but 70.
Well, this is the point, you see, because what Alex, although I've never met Alex, what Alex is talking about is the fifth dimension. And it's really interesting because his experience in the fifth is obviously very different from mine in the fourth, because the third and the fourth are very closely linked, but the third and the fifth are poles apart. So the emphasis on education is different in the fifth. It's about knowledge, not because you're going to go and do a degree or you're going to go and mend pipes, but it's about knowledge on a much wider scale. So their whole concept, and the further up you go in the dimensions, the further and further away from this understanding here in the third dimension, their form of education. So, for instance, they have music. They listen to music, but it is different sorts of music. Bodies like planets and stars create sound, and they have the technology to be able to capture that sound. And for many of them, that's music. It's really interesting. Molecules vibrating, atoms vibrating, create a frequency. Well, they don't necessarily do what Spock in Star Trek used to do, which is to play some sort of lyre type instrument, but they will hear natural sounds created on a nano way, and they can boost that sound. So it is a very different way of living. It's a very different concept, but there are still things that run through that we can understand here on the third dimension. So that's why humanity must evolve quickly in terms of its concepts of right and wrong, but gently and slowly in its concepts of changing the way it wants to build the planet, build the way that our system, because all of our systems are built on money. They're all about power and greed and control. And that's not how it is in the fifth and the higher dimensions. These are values that they just turn their back on. So it's the concept of the family, the concept of the individual, in the sense that that person can have free will as long as they don't harm anyone else. And But we need to ask, Alex, are there prisons? I believe there are, but they probably only have about 5 or 6 inmates. So this planet here, this worth, these people on this planet have got to make a fundamental change, which is going to be wonderful. You know, it's just going to be absolutely fantastic. And, you know, it can't come soon enough. So there we go.
Marvellous. That is, I mean, it's the hopeful stuff that we're looking for. Now, I think we're, we're just about out of time.
No, we're not. We've got 4 minutes. Come on.
Okay, then. All right. This is going to take me 4 minutes to read a note. Cecilia Castaneda Medina. Thank you, Cecilia. Simon, is our higher self or past DNA asleep in us? And if so, does he or she awake in crucial situations? For example, once I was attacked by an entity while in my mum's house and I was sleeping. It held me by the neck, and all of a sudden my hand moved and I held it by the neck, and I opened my eyes and saw a being made of plasma who opens its eyes so big as if it was surprised, looking into my eyes, but I didn't feel fear or anything. It was as if a switch was turned on at the moment of the attack and then off when it was over and the entity was gone. Wow. You know, something woke up, eh?
It's a very good description there. Within all people, but particularly people who are not Earth humans, there is a DNA memory. So don't just think about your organic brain doing the thinking. Your DNA memory in your body is actually really, really good. And you're right, JP. So she accessed her higher self, accessed, what is this? What do I need to do? No panic. And she just held her ground, held her strength, held her truth. And the creature thought, oops, you know, I can't overwrought this one, I can't frighten this one, it's not going to go away screaming, I need to go. And this is the point, when you're faced with these creatures, don't panic, don't get cross, don't get scared, just stand there and say, you know, you have no place here, you know, just go. And that's what they can't handle, because the natural reaction is to get your adrenaline going, all the chemicals in your body and all the stuff that they don't have generally. So that's what they like. So if you don't react to it, and you're just very calm and you face them up, they have to go. And this is what people forget, because we've seen too many films on Hollywood. The reality is that if you make a decision, then none of these creatures can stand against you, but you have to believe in it. The old adage, we've got 1 minute left, JP, the old adage of Dracula and the priest or the father stands there shaking with a crucifix back Dracula, and Dracula makes some of those demonic laughs and then kills the priest. It wasn't the cross or the crucifix that ever held Dracula back. The reality was, it's the belief and strength of the person that Dracula was facing. If the person believes truthfully in their values and is unshakable, then there isn't anything that can stand against you. You don't need a cross or a crucifix. You don't need that. You just need to believe in your truth and to be honest and strong and not to get all emotional. And these creatures can't harm you. So that's what you need to do.
On that note, thank you very much, Simon Parks, for another amazing journey into your world. This has been Connecting Consciousness. We're going to be we have a show afterwards that discusses the things that you've been talking about, just letting you know, held by Nancy and Walt, and want to sort of continue asking questions from the chat room and joining in the discussion. Maybe we just keep this going all evening. Thank you so much, Simon. Have a great great Christmas. I'm not going
to
say
holiday. I just want to say to everyone, have a great holiday.
Yeah.
Wherever you are, have a great time. And really and truly, JP, you do need to put on a red coat and a cotton wool beard.
Oh,
and we need to see you doing that.
Rudolph, come over here. Get me out of here.
God bless. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.